理课堂听 class.com
Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Today we're continuing with a science article on sending in rats to find survivors in wreckage of collapsed buildings.Hi, everyone, and welcome to Advanced here at Studio Classroom. My name is Troy, and today with me in the studio are our three hosts from yesterday's program, Pam, Bill, and Ethan. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Troy.
Hi, Troy.
Now, yesterday, let's review just a bit because we might have some new listeners who did not get in on yesterday's program, but it's the science article on using rats,equipped rats, of course, to locate survivors that are buried in wreckage of collapsed buildings. So how does all of this work? What did we start with yesterday?
Well, it's a rather technical article, Troy, which is interesting because we're talking about rats, and you wouldn't think this is going to be technical, but we discussed a lot of the electronic signals and the neurological process that's involved in taking signals from the brains of the rat to help identify the location of survivors.
Okay, now why not use a dog?
Well, we talked a little bit about this last time, Troy. Dogs, like rats, have a very strong sense of smell. They can pick up odors very easily, especially those they're trained to find or to detect. But the problem is, dogs cannot get under the buried wreckage in the way that rats can crawl and go almost anywhere.
If you look at the top of page 14, you can see that there is a picture there of them climbing in the rubble of the fallen building, and you can see just how difficult it would be for a dog or a person to try and go looking for someone in there. But a rat is so small that it could easily work its way through the little holes it could squeeze in and find the different people that would be trapped underneath.
Now, of course, dogs have great noses. They have a great olfactory sense. They can smell things in the wind from long distances away. We know that's true of dogs. Well, that's also true of rats as well. So I think neuroscientists discovered why not use rats instead of dogs, because rats are more mobile. At least when you're crawling through wreckage, they're a much smaller animal, and therefore they can get around much better inside the wreckage to locate through their olfactory sense, through smell. They can sniff out a survivor in the wreckage. So they're using rats to do this. And yesterday we talked about there are two kinds of devices that are on the rat. One, of course, is strapped to the rat, and the other is implanted, Bill.
Yes, we've got electrodes implanted directly on the brain, and these are attached to the olfactory cortex, the motor cortex, and the reward center of the rat, and that signals to the rescuers where the survivors are.
Mm-hmm. Now, if we look on page 15, Ethan, yesterday you pointed out the nice graphic that we have there that actually shows a setup here of one of these rats that is equipped for finding survivors.
Yes, and you can see that there's the implant in the rat's brain that is connected to this, what it looks like almost as a backpack. And this backpack has a small radio transmitter, and it'll emit the transmission whenever the implant sends off the signal to it. And so that is how the rescuers are able to find these rats, is that all of a sudden this backpack comes on because the implant in the rat's brain has sent the signal saying, yes, the rat has found someone.
Okay. Well, you might have electrodes implanted inside the brain. Other times you may have electrodes that are connected to the skin and that they sense some kind of change in the pattern of your nervous system or your skin temperature. So neuroscientists use a variety of ways in order to detect movement or a change in disposition or activity.
Yes, Troy, a lot of our listeners might be more familiar with a lie detector test. That's what happens, and it identifies certain sensations in the skin and electronic signals, and then, of course, it charts it by high spikes or waves to indicate a change in electronic impulse.
And essentially, this is what they are also doing when monitoring the rescue rat. They also recognize the brain wave patterns have changed. In fact, there are two kinds of signals typically sent by the rat. First, it's a high-frequency signal bill, which actually occurs again. There's this neurological activity, this activity within the nervous system of the rat, a high-frequency signal is being sent. And then there's a low-frequency signal.
Right. High-frequency would be if you were excited or happy about something. And low-frequency would be decreased activity. And that would be if you were afraid of something or if you wish to withdraw from a situation. That would be the lower frequency.
Well, let's find out then more about this subject right here on Advanced Studio Classroom and have Marcy now begin the reading of Day 2 of the article, Send in the Rescue Rats, found on page 14.
The researchers train the rats to search for human odor by stimulating the reward center when it finds its target smell. Once the rats are trained, they are set to forage for the target smell, while electrodes record their neural activity patterns. This allows researchers to identify the brainwave patterns associated with finding that smell. They are also able to train the rats to sniff out the explosives TNT and RDX, key after terrorist attacks that may leave buildings harboring unexploded bombs. Signals from the rat's brain are relayed to a radio transmitter pack strapped to the animal's back. Rescuers are able to follow the rat's position by tracking these signals. They are also developing software that will recognize the aha moment when the rat has found its target, so rescuers will know where to start digging.
Thank you, Marcy, for reading for us the first half of our Advanced Studio Classroom lesson entitled Send in the Rescue Rats. And we then see on page 14, the first line, it says the researchers actually train these rats, Pamela.
That's right. This is an interesting concept to me. I wouldn't think that rats would be as easy to train as perhaps dogs. Their brains aren't as large. We know that. They're not as intelligent. But what they have done is they have discovered that by stimulating the reward center of the brain, we talked about this yesterday, they can train the rats to search for human odor or the target smell.
Okay, so it says that they are set in motion or released to forage for the target smell. What does it mean to forage, Ethan?
Well, we often use the term forage when we're talking about looking for food, and we define it as to go from place to place searching for something. It can be anything, but we use talking about food.
Okay. So we see then on down that this allows researchers to identify the brainwave patterns associated with finding that smell. Now, I think they already know what those patterns are because they've trained the rat to identify that smell, and they're looking for a particular brainwave pattern that's being sent by the electrodes implanted in the rat's brain. And when they see that same pattern represented on their monitors at the surface, aha, they know that the rat has found its target. Of course, it's searching for a survivor in the wreckage of in the event of an earthquake or of a bomb blast or some other kind of catastrophe.
Right. And I find it interesting that they've been able to train these rats to identify the smell of human beings. And so they've got the smell, and then they're stimulating the reward center somehow. And so the rat identifies the smell of the human being as a positive signal.
Interesting, isn't it? And so we see here that they've not only been trained to sniff out target smells such as that of human beings, but also another kind.
Explosives. We see that they've been trained to sniff out explosives like TNT and RDX. I guess these were two key explosives that were used in some of the terrorist attacks.
Oftentimes, well, I think it's true. I think maybe in every case that when there has been some kind of a bomb explosion, there are trace elements or trace chemicals, that's T-R-A-C-E, trace chemicals that are left at the site. And so they can use these rats to find these trace chemicals in an easier fashion than scientists normally are involved in doing. Finding trace elements like that can really take a long time. And if it rains, the trace chemicals might be washed away, but using a rat, while he may be able to find the smell of these trace chemicals associated with the type of explosive used in the bomb in a much faster manner.
Yes, we say that the buildings are harboring these explosives that have not been detonated yet. Mm. And so to harbor something means to protect someone or something from detection and provide a hiding place. And it also just means to be holding something. So these buildings still have these bombs that have maybe not been detonated, even though they tried to detonate them, they didn't go off. And so these are now a danger to the people because they could go off at any time. And so they're using these rats to find them.
This might even work in some cases where a bomb scare is in effect. Someone has placed a call to an emergency hotline number, and they've actually said, hey, there's a bomb in such and such a location. Now, of course, you wouldn't want to do that. That's illegal to actually say something like that or report something like that if it isn't true. On the other hand, there are people out there, terrorists, who will make some kind of a call similar to this. Well, they could send a rat in, or several kinds of rats, all with the ability to sniff out different types of smells associated with different kinds of bomb explosive chemicals.
Right, and that would be one way of finding the evidence or maybe helping prevent one of these tragedies.
Mm-hmm. So we see then on the top of page 15 that, again, the signals from the rat's brain are relayed to the radio transmitter, and this transmitter is a pack that's strapped to the animal's back. So we've talked about the way that these signals are sent. One of the words we use when we're talking about an electronic form of sending a signal is the word relay. We use the word relay here.
Relay means to broadcast a signal, message, or program. And in fact, right now we are relaying Advanced Studio Classroom over the radio.
Okay. So the signal then is relayed from the rat's brain to the transmitter on its back. The transmitter transmits the signal to the surface. And then it says that the rescuers are able to follow the rat's position by tracking these signals, not just its brain waves, but also its physical location because it's wearing a transmitter. And then we see that they are also developing software that will recognize the aha moment. I suppose it will make it a little easier than just reading graphs. When they see a spike in the graph, they may say, aha, is this clear evidence that the rat has found a survivor? Well, maybe the software will help to ferret out or remove some of the ambient elements surrounding these signals being sent by the rat's brain and really help perhaps the rescuers to focus in on that aha moment.
Well, I could see how it would be necessary for the software to be developed, as we talk about in line 5 there, because we're monitoring 3 different frequencies, the 1 high frequency and the 2 low-level frequencies, and also the location. So for a human being to be watching all of these different frequencies might be too much. I think what they're talking about here is the software brings all 3 together to where maybe there's a combination of these frequencies, and it can trigger the signal saying, there it is.
Mm. Well, that's one of the neat things about software, too, is that sometimes it can make what would be a very difficult task if you're only reading a graph or a chart, and software can combine a wider range of elements or computations into this and come out with perhaps a more correct answer. Well, what about robots? We've all heard about robots being used in rescue missions. It looks like maybe rats could have the upper hand. After all, robots are mechanical and rats are biological. They're kind of like us, aren't they? Well, let's have Marcy now read for us the second half of today's lesson on page 15 in your Advanced magazine.
Robots versus rats. Other teams looking at ways to seek people trapped under debris have designed wheeled, tracked, or even snake-like robots that can slither into wrecked buildings. But rats have several advantages. Artificial noses don't work well when there are other smells around, says Christian Linster, an olfaction expert at Cornell University in New York. Rats are good at that. Rats are also adept at navigating over unexpected obstacles, and of course, They don't need an electricity supply. Rats to the rescue. Rescue teams welcomed the idea. It would be absolutely fantastic, says Julie Ryan of International Rescue Corps in Scotland, which flies rescuers to disaster zones around the world. A rat could get in voids and spaces we couldn't get to. And a rat would try to get out if it didn't feel safe.
Okay, thank you, Marcy, for reading for us the second half of today's advanced lesson. We're looking now at the section on page 15, Robots versus Rats. Who's going to win this war? What about robots? What, you know, do they have a part in seeking or sniffing out or searching for survivals found in wreckage?
Well, I never knew they did, Troy, until I read this article. But there are a lot of things, a lot of options that are being considered and are being experimented with at this time. I think especially since terrorism is such a wide reality around the world now. And it seems that we've had a lot of major devastating earthquakes in recent years. So they're looking for different ways, and robotic animals or robotic devices are being experimented with.
I think, Troy, one of the things that is mentioned here as far as wheeled, tracked, or even snake-like robots that we don't have any article, but I have seen on television and the internet is also the additional capability of having little cameras put on, whether it be robots. And I'm guessing maybe they can do that with these rats, is to attach a small camera.
One of the things that I think is interesting is the next sentence there. It says, artificial noses don't work well when there are other smells around. And I think this is really neat, that there is something about the fact that the rat is a biological being, that it can sense what a smell is coming from, and it can differentiate, whereas a mechanical nose can only do what it's programmed to do. And right now, it cannot be programmed to ignore outside smells. It can only be programmed to detect certain smells, and a lot of the times that can get confused with smells that come in from the outside.
Okay, and that's what the article is telling us here, that the artificial noses of mechanical devices such as robots really do not have an advantage over rats, because rats, of course, have a real biological brain, and therefore they can make decisions based on the information that, not that they've been given, but that they've been trained to smell or to sniff out. Unlike robots, that, of course, as you said, Ethan, that information has been programmed into it. So they're looking for, it says, people that are trapped under debris, D-E-B-R-I-S. We've also been using the term wreckage here as well.
And debris, Troy, is just small, torn, broken pieces of something larger. Sometimes we'll talk about the debris from an airplane crash.
Now, when you get down inside some of this wreckage, of course, it can be a mess. It is a mess. That's what wreckage is, as well as a pile of rubble or debris. But now, rats are pretty good, aren't they, at navigating their way through a maze of debris?
Yes, we use the word adept here, and that means having a natural ability to do something that needs a skill. So these rats really have a keen skill of being able to work their way through something. You think about, we've seen movies where the scientist has the rat in a maze and it works through all these tiny little corridors. And it's this very similar idea in which it can work its way through all the tiny little holes in the wreckage.
Okay, so human beings are adept at some things, and of course rats are adept at crawling around in small places.
Right, we might say as far as a person, well, he is very adept at fixing automobiles. And that means he has a lot of skill to do that.
Good point.
I think one of the greatest benefits that we can have, or one of the greatest reasons you could use rats, is the next sentence. It says, they don't need an electricity supply. And so not only do they have these good things in that they're adept at clawing through small spaces and that they have a really strong sense of smell that is even better than mechanical ones, but we don't have to supply them with electricity. They can find their own food and manage off of that.
Okay, batteries not included. Okay. We see here then the last statement in the last paragraph is made by a Julie Ryan of the International Rescue Corps in Scotland. And she flies to disaster zones around the world. And what does she say about these rescue rats?
Well, it seems that these rescue teams are excited about this possibility, Troy. Her quote is, "A rat could get in voids and spaces we couldn't get to, and a rat would try to get out if it didn't feel safe."
So there would be that high-frequency response when the rat's getting closer, perhaps, to its target smell. On the other hand, if it recognizes that it's not safe, the brainwave patterns might change, and they would see negative brainwave patterns, and that might indicate that the rat is trying to save its own life.
Well, I think that's true. A neat thing is that the rat will be able to sense if the wreckage is unstable and is going to collapse more, because it is then dangerous for the rescuers to be climbing around on it. And so they can pick up on the cues from the rat that we need to get off of this wreckage or out of this wreckage, or we may end up being trapped in it as well.
Well, I sure hope our listeners will recognize how unique you are. No, not because you're a rat, but because, like the rat, you're a biological creature, even a biological creation. You've been made in a very, very special way. And it's impossible even that human beings can recreate that in some mechanical or biomechanical form. We are unique. And I hope you know that. And it's why I wanted to tell you on today's program. Well, now we have today's feature.
We continue with yesterday's story, Rescue Rats. What's the latest update, Jordan?
Yes, Tom. I'm here again with Linda Homer-Vasquez, researcher of the Rescue Rat Project. Linda, we've already discussed how rats have an advantage over dogs in finding trapped victims.
That's right. Rats are able to crawl more easily through the rubble than dogs.
But, as we all know, dogs are very intelligent and very easy to train. How do you train rats to do such a complicated job?
Well, dogs have been used for sending out people and chemicals for the better part of the 20th century. But recently, we've developed the technology that allows us to be able to monitor and, to a degree, control the rats.
Can you tell our viewers a little more about how you do this?
As you know, we have several electrodes planted in the rats' brains. When we train them to search for odors, we give them a signal that provides a pleasurable sensation. This causes the rats to be more motivated in finding the correct smell.
But how can you know when a rat has actually found a trapped human being?
Jordan, when dogs recognize a particular odor, they will give behavioral signs such as jumping and barking. With rats, we use a more subtle approach to when they recognize an odor.
How so?
We also have sensors that record the rat's neurological patterns. We can recognize these patterns and can distinguish between when a rat has found a victim or not. We call this the aha moment.
Aha! Now I think I'm starting to understand. And what happens when the aha moment occurs?
We pinpoint where the signal came from, and the rescue team can then move to that location and do whatever they need to do.
These unexpected pests turn out to be lifesavers. What's next? Will they find a way for cockroaches to cure cancer, or for termites to raise the economy? Back to you, Tom.
Thank you, Jordan. Now, in a related news, an earthquake has struck the African country of Zimbabwe. The earthquake, measured 9.9 on the Richter scale, has killed millions of lives.
Thank you for today's feature, and don't leave because we have some rat terms. That's right, some unusual English language words and phrases using the word rat. And the first one that we find here, Bill, is an expression, and it's expressed rats.
We might say rats to express frustration. Rats, I locked my keys in my car.
All right. It's a good word to use. It's safe. And what's the next one, Pam?
The next one is the rat race. And this is a way of life that's characterized by people competing with each other for power and money. Oftentimes we'll say, I don't want a job where I'll get caught in the rat race. I want to do something I really believe in.
I think there was a movie called The Rat Race, and you see these people are all doing even crazy things trying to get ahead in this race. Our next one is someone is a rat, and that's a noun, and it's just an unpleasant person who deceives others or is not loyal.
All right. So what's the example sentence found here?
Our example sentence is, Sir, I'm afraid there's a rat in the department. Someone has leaked information to our competitor.
Okay. Or you might call someone a rat if they tricked you in some way. Okay. What's the next one here, Bill?
Rat on. That means to be disloyal or maybe say something about somebody that might not be fair. When I was young, my brother ratted on me when I misbehaved and told my mother.
Ah, so it's when you tell on someone.
Mm-hmm.
And what about rugrat, Pam?
This is a really cute sort of informal expression that we use to refer to a young child. And we could be saying that this child, this little person, is getting into some mischievous activity. He's a rugrat. And our sample sentence here is, I don't want to work in a kindergarten. I could never keep all those little rugrats under control.
All right. Probably not the nicest of phrases to use. The next one, though, is ratty, and it's a great one.
This means shabby, showing signs of being used a lot or neglected. That's in the U.S., and if you're in the U.K., this word means irritable. It's a slightly different meaning.
So, Bill, what would be a good example?
Well, Troy, I was on a bus the other day, and it was just in terrible condition. And I told a friend, I said, that bus was really ratty.
Okay. A ratty old bus, a ratty old place. And lastly, we're looking at the noun phrase rat, but that is often preceded by a noun place.
Another noun. That's right. We could say a pool rat, a gym rat, a mall rat, someone who spends most of his or her free time at this certain place. We often talk about girls being mall rats. She loves to go to the mall. Mm. But our sample sentence is, my cousin is a pool rat. He's on the swim team, he works as a lifeguard, and he spends all of his free time at the swimming pool.
Okay, I don't think we would say someone is an English rat, though. This is always location-oriented. Well, thank you for joining us on today's program. And until next time, this is Troy.
And this is Pam.
This is Bill.
And Ethan.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye.